pointed out Cassiel's footprints again on the dusty floor. Jack nodded that he knew what they were, finally conceding that she was right. Broken stubs of pipes sticking out low on the right threatened to catch their ankles. To the left was a room left exposed by the collapsed brick wall. Rusty tanks stood against a wall. They looked like they might be some sort of old industrial water heaters. Everything was covered with a heavy layer of greasy dust. Ductwork and pipes coming out of the water heaters went in all directions back into the darkness, while some came out of the room to run overhead along the ceiling of the corridor. Jack grabbed her sleeve between a finger and thumb to urgently stop her. He pointed ahead to a place in the floor that was hard to see in the flare of light coming in from the window directly ahead.
"There's a hole in the floor,"
he whispered.
"Be careful."
Angela nodded and moved on, hugging the wall to shuffle past the rectangular hole. It was probably a utility pass-through. She looked down as she went by. It would have been a long fall, 2 stories into a dark basement. When they reached the window, the passage turned to the right and terminated at a flight of open, iron-tread stairs. The wall studs were exposed. Dusty insulation and thick veils of filthy cobwebs hung down in places. Fallen plaster lay on some of the iron treads. They started up, both pointing their guns up at any threat that might be above them. Plaster crunched softly underfoot. On the next floor, Angela gently pushed open a door. It squeaked. A man standing guard at the main stairwell, not too far away, immediately turned and saw them. He turned back to shout an alarm up the stairs. That denied her the preferred target of the triangle between his eyes at the tip of his nose. She admonished herself for not taking the shot immediately. She knew better. Before he had a chance to make a sound, Angela put a round through his windpipe, immediately followed by a second one through the center of his left ear. By the way he dropped, the round through his ear had penetrated his skull just fine. The guards at each flight of stairs were the reason Cassiel had avoided the main stairwell and instead snuck away down the utility stairs at the back. Now that they knew where the guards were posted, Angela took them out at each level on their way up. She didn't want men left down below rushing up the stairs behind them once the fight started. After they had made their way up the lower floors, which looked to be more for manufacturing type of work, they reached the smaller upper floors. The stairs there had proper railings that looked more ornamental. She also saw iron radiators and more windows. Some floors had dust-covered desks and chairs. At each level, she took out the guard. Before going through the final doorway at the top floor, she stopped and put in a full magazine. She held her weapon in both hands, pointed up, adjusting her grip, taking a couple of deep breaths, preparing to go through the final door. This was where the bomb was. She could see it in her mind, in the memories from Cassiel. This was where Raphael and the rest of his team were gathered for their final religious act. She could feel her heart pounding. She repeated the mantra to herself, "Speed and violence of action." Angela remembered her grandfather snapping his fingers as fast as he could, teaching her to pull off shots that fast as she fired at the target. Angela looked back at Jack. "It's been nice knowing you." 67.
"Remember, we have to stop them from detonating that bomb,"
Jack whispered with earnest concern.
"Nothing else matters. We need to stop the guy sitting on that dead man's switch from getting up. If he gets up from that chair, it's over."
Angela nodded.
"I know what he looks like. I'll find him."
She gave him a long last look.
"I've got this, Jack.
Stay behind me and take care of anyone who tries to sneak up on me from behind." Jack answered with a single nod. Angela took a last deep breath and then shoved the utility door open with her shoulder. She burst into a semi-dark room. In the span of a heartbeat, she took in the entire room, matching it to the memory in her head. Iron posts held up a network of overhead trusses. The ceiling, above naked girders, was broken open in places, letting insulation and corrugated tin panels hang down. The windows ringing the room were covered with cardboard. Two big skylights let in light. The place was a tangle of dusty, broken, water-stained desks and chairs. Junk lay scattered across the floor among the desks. Nails, screws, iron fittings, torn metal scraps, soggy cardboard boxes, and lengths of pipe of every size lay toppled over one another, some with one end resting on desks. She made note of it all, but mostly she took note of the men. She knew she would have to be careful not to trip over things as she focused on the men. It felt like she was watching herself move in slow motion. Broken glass lay scattered everywhere, reflecting flashes of light as she charged into the room. A counter to her left with a tile front looked like a truck had fallen on it and splintered it apart. Boards leaned against filthy walls to the right. Metal doors of gutted utility boxes stood open with wires hanging out. Angela spotted the spherical bomb sitting on a square stack of cement blocks. Wires attached to brass studs stuck out from the metal casing here and there around the bomb. A narrow metal cabinet of some sort stood close to the bomb. Clusters of wires, reminding her of umbilical cords, sagged between the metal-gray cabinet and the bomb. Rows of amber lights on the front of the cabinet flickered on and off. In this filthy, abandoned ruin of a building, the bomb and the cabinet with flickering lights looked like nothing so much as an alien spacecraft. There were men scattered throughout the room, some bent in prayer, some sitting in groups talking, some with their arms crossed as they leaned back in chairs against walls or posts. Some were gathered around desks or stools playing card games. Some were on the far side of the room, peeking out a window past a curtain of cardboard, while others paced in nervous boredom, anticipating their imminent martyrdom. At the crash of sound Angela made plunging in through the metal door, faces everywhere turned toward her and froze in surprise. As her heart beat a second time, her gun came up. Slowly, slowly, yet as fast as she could possibly raise it. Angela felt as if she were mired in the agonizing slow motion of a deep dream. Her boots crunched on debris. She heard glass snap as it broke. A board behind the door she'd burst through toppled. It didn't matter anymore. Nothing else mattered anymore. The rest of her life, up to that moment, didn't matter anymore. Her heart's second beat ended. The closest man turned as he heard the glass break under her boot. Without conscious thought, he made the fatal mistake of reflexively looking down at her legs. With his face frozen in time beyond the front sight of her gun, Angela pulled the trigger. With that pop and metallic clack of the slide cycling in another round, it started. As he dropped straight down, others in the dim room saw the flash from her gun and the man falling to the ground. They realized the sounds they heard hadn't been one of their brothers knocking something over. She saw men everywhere in the room going for AKs leaning against desks, chairs, iron columns, and construction debris. Suddenly, the whole room was moving with men, like when she used to flip on the light switch in the kitchen of the trailer where she'd grown up, and cockroaches scattered. Angela was already firing at targets. Speed and violence of action. This was what she had practiced for her whole life. Now, she had a roomful of living triangles before her. They all bobbed and swayed beyond her front sight. In her head, her grandfather's fingers snapped as fast as he could snap them, a human metronome setting the beat for her as she fired her gun. Angela was in the slow-motion trance of the zone. Any man who went for a weapon was a primary target. Men who were close and pulled knives were next. She fired without pause. Men collapsed, their guns dropped to bounce on the floor as bullets ricocheted around inside craniums. As dead men fell, they flipped over chairs and stools being used as game tables. Playing cards flew up as tables broke. Angela planted her boot on a chair as a man fell and boosted herself up and over him into the heart of the storm. She counted rounds. The instant the slide locked back, she was ready and pressed her thumb down on the lever, dropping the magazine. Another was immediately slammed home. She racked the slide to load around, and she was already shooting again at the closest men rushing toward her. Automatic fire suddenly broke out, filling the room with deafening noise and the raging scream of the man firing the weapon. She saw flashes from the gun rattling off rounds to her right. She could hear the bullets zipping past her head, flicking her hair as they passed close but just missed killing her. Jack rolled through the debris on the floor and between desks, using them for cover. With a well-placed shot, he took out the man firing the automatic weapon before he could take aim for another burst at Angela. She hardly noticed. It was irrelevant. She was in her own world of converging chaos, firing into faces as fast as she could lock her sights onto them. When a man turned to reach for a gun on a desk, she put a round in the back of his head, right at the base of his skull. She spotted the man she needed beyond the gray cabinet with the flickering amber lights. His eyes were still wide in shock. The air was filled with the smell of gunpowder and blood. It was intoxicating. Angela had always thought there was a rhythm to shooting, a kind of metallic music. Bang, 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 pause, bang. Bullets splashed into the center of those triangles, and men spiraled down toward the floor, dancing with her to that beat. Bang, 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 pause, bang. Every bullet found its target. Men tumbled. Reload. Pop, 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 pause. It was the rhythm of life. It was the rhythm of death. Angela was firing in every direction to that beat. Men fell all around her as the unforeseen specter of death itself swept through the room. Dust billowed up as men crashed down among debris. To her left, when a dead man landed on one end, a board flipped into the air, throwing up a cloud of dust. To the right, pipes stacked against an iron post clattered down as a dead man fell into them. The room was pandemonium. Men everywhere were yelling. Lost in her own world, Angela hardly heard them. She didn't need to watch men fall to know she had killed them. She could sense the bullet hitting home. She was focused only on taking out targets as fast as possible to get where she was going. She didn't need to look into the eyes of any of these men. They were all cold-blooded killers who had worked their entire lives toward their goal of mass murder. They didn't belong among the living. Her only purpose was to exterminate them. It was an orgy of annihilation. Angela had already emptied 3 magazines and a handful of heartbeats as she charged through the terrorists, cutting a bloody swath, the dead falling all around her. With a gun in her hand, Angela felt like she imagined knights must have felt with a sword in their hands as they scythed down an onrushing enemy. It felt intimately familiar, brutally liberating. It was positively exhilarating. With a gun in her hands, these men weren't bigger than her, stronger than her. With a gun in her hands, she became more than their equal. Terrorists liked to tout themselves as superhuman, as welcoming death. Despite their claims, they responded to shock, surprise, fear of death, and pain virtually the same as anyone would. She used that to her advantage. Angela shot men as they were coming up out of chairs, killing some before they had the presence of mind to stand, as they went for guns or pulled knives. Many were so surprised they froze as they stared at her in confused shock, at a woman with platinum hair suddenly there in their midst. It made no sense to them. Some saw her legs and were distracted for a fraction of a second, just long enough for her to make that the last thing they ever saw. Automatic gunfire erupted from other parts of the room. Bullets splattered against iron posts. She felt the hot sting of one just clipping her left arm at the shoulder. She paused momentarily to put a bullet between the eyes of the guy firing at her. Jack took out others. As a man fell in front of her, she jumped on him to boost herself up onto and over a desk toward the man she was after, the man sitting on the dead man's switch. If he came up off his chair, the bomb would go off. Suddenly, no one else existed but her and that man in the chair. He was momentarily frozen, wide-eyed, in shock. His hands gripped the chair seat. Some of the wires from the metal cabinet ran to the bottom of his chair. He was a deer in the headlights, wanting to run, wanting to detonate the bomb, waiting for a command from his leader. He was so confused and panicked by the ferocity of what was happening all around him, from seeing his friends falling dead everywhere, that for a fleeting moment, he was paralyzed. Angela didn't pay any attention to anything else happening around her. If she died going after this target, then so be it. Before the man could regain his wits and jump up off that dead man's switch, Angela fired as she leaped over the desk. When she landed with her feet spread in front of him, she emptied a nearly full magazine into his face. The bullets shut down his motor functions so fast he hadn't been able to move a muscle. Because the bullets didn't have enough energy to physically knock him off the chair, he simply slumped in place. Jack was already in midair, flying over men ducking aside. He landed on the net of wires between the bomb and the electrical panel. Sparks showered through the room as the weight of his body ripped out that electrical umbilical cord. When he hit the floor, he went still. Angela didn't know if he'd been shot, stabbed, or electrocuted. Her being distracted by Jack enabled a man to rush up in her blind spot, swinging a board. The stunning blow caught her on the side of the head. The world went black. The next thing she knew, she was rolling through the debris on the floor. She lost her gun. A screaming man with a handgun fired wildly at her. Bullets shattered pieces of glass right beside her head as she tumbled across the floor. As she rolled to a stop on her back, she saw her gun. She stretched and snatched it up, then ducked to the side. The man standing over her was trying to aim at a moving target. She fired first. It was the last bullet. The slide locked back. He dropped on top of her right leg. She kicked him over with her left foot and scrambled back to her feet. As she dropped the empty magazine, she saw that the man who had been sitting on the dead man's switch was slumped in the chair, feet straight out, his arms hanging at his sides, blood running down both sides of his mutilated face. He'd never had a chance to stand, leaving his dead weight slumped on the switch. Now, thanks to Jack, even if someone else got to him and knocked him off the chair, it wouldn't do any good. Angela slammed home a new magazine just in time to fire into the face of a man with a knife charging up right in front of her, and then another just behind him. Both men fell at her feet, one to either side. She was disoriented from the blow to her head and didn't know how many more men there were. She decided there was no point in trying to count them. She just needed to focus on the task at hand and shoot any of them still alive. The shock of seeing so many of their companions falling dead so unexpectedly and so swiftly had more than a few of the men frozen, stock still, paralyzed by the fear. This wasn't glorious martyrdom for Allah. This was simply being shot and killed for nothing. Focused as she was on shooting moving targets, she temporarily ignored the panic-stricken men to take out ones going for guns or racing toward her with knives. During the rolling drumbeat of the rhythm in her head as she fired, she used some of those stock-still human targets for punctuations in the beat. As three men charged her all at once from different directions, she took out two, and then the slide locked back as her gun went empty. As she was dropping the magazine, the third man dove in to grab her free arm. She dropped the gun and used both hands to reverse his hold on her forearm. She bent his wrist to the side until she felt bones snap. As Angela held his wrist bent over in an impossible position, he cried out, crouching down under the pressure, leaning over to the side to try to relieve the strain she was holding on his broken wrist. When he grimaced up at her in agony, she recognized him from Cassiel's memories. It was Raphael. Keeping the tension on his wrist with her left hand, Angela pulled her second gun from the holster on her hip. She pointed the weapon down at his face.
"Shoot me! Go ahead! Shoot me!" he yelled. Allah will welcome me. I will be a martyr, a hero.
Angela smiled. Okay, but don't say you didn't ask for it. She shot him in both knees. She released his hand to let him fall to the floor, thrashing and screaming in pain.
What? Not so fun to be in pain? She asked him.
You expected to be vaporized in a glorious, pain-free instant in the blinding light of a nuclear explosion?
I guess things aren't turning out so well for you, are they, Raphael?
He reached for her with his free hand as he called her names in Farsi. She shot the hand stretching for her. He flinched back with a shriek.
American whore!
She grinned down at him.
Just think, Raphael. You've been beaten by a woman. Twice. With both bombs. Your whole plan, your life's work, has been defeated by an American woman who has just proven she is better than you and all your men.
A breathless Jack ran up beside her.
Sorry. That jolt knocked me for a loop. I think I must have been out for a few seconds.
He looked around, gun in hand and ready. He couldn't find a target. He looked down at the man groaning on the ground.
This is Raphael, Angela told him as she pointed with her gun.
Well, don't shoot him,
Jack said.
He's valuable alive for intelligence.
Fuck intelligence. If he's dead, that's all they need to know.
Jack pushed her hand aside.
No, really, Angela. We need to turn him over alive. U.S. intelligence will need to know how they were able to pull all of this off.
Angela looked around to see if anyone else was moving. She saw a man, covered in dusty debris, who had been pretending to be dead, trying not to be noticed as he slowly crawled away. Angela walked over and pointed her gun down at him as she told him to stay where he was. He looked back over his shoulder at her gun and did as he was told.
This one looks like he wants to live, she told Jack. Let them have him, too. He'll talk. Isn't that right, Lobo?
Jack yanked some wires out of the electrical panel and used them to tie up both Raphael and Lobo. Angela looked around at all the dead lying everywhere. It had only lasted seconds. It had lasted forever. She wondered if her mother ever felt this high when she did a line.
68.
Jack heard men on the floors below yelling,
"Clear!"
as they went through everything along the way. He didn't hear any gunshots. Angela had already cleared the floors below, as well as the lookouts, on their way up. He leaned toward her.
Let me do the talking, okay? Even though I'm the one who called this in, these men aren't going to assume anything. With something of this nature, they have to consider everything as a potential threat. They're not going to take chances. It's nothing personal.
Jack could tell by the way her eyes flicked over everything, looking for any sign of trouble, any target, that she was still wired and in kill mode. Her carotid artery was pulsing a mile a minute. Things were about to get a different kind of dangerous. He didn't want any accidents.
Angela, listen to me. It's over. Take a deep breath. Keep your mouth closed and let me take it from here. Don't freak out about anything I tell them. It will be what I need to say to keep you safe.
Angela let out a deep breath.
Okay. I understand.
Jack was relieved she was listening to him, but then she was smart and he would have expected nothing less. Dozens of men in black tactical gear poured up the stairwell and fanned out into the room like a black flood oozing up from below. It was a fearsome sight, and meant to be. Under their helmets, everything but their eyes was covered. They all moved quickly, weapons up and ready for anything. Many of those weapons were quickly pointed toward Angela and Jack.
Hands! Hands!
Several of them yelled at the same time, as if they'd just cornered the devil himself. Jack was relieved to see Angela lift her hands with him. They were both quickly surrounded by guns pointed at them from every direction.
Hands behind your heads! Now! Do it now!
Lace your fingers together,
one of them yelled as others pulled out handcuffs. Angela and Jack both did as instructed.
Where's Angus?
Jack asked as a man pulled one of his arms down around behind his back.
Here!
A familiar voice called out from beyond the wall of men in tactical gear. He was huffing as he hurried up the steps. As he got closer, he urged the men to let him through. They had already handcuffed Angela and Jack.
Take it easy, Angus told them. These two are friendlies. They're the ones who called us in. Take off the cuffs, please.
One of the men took the cuffs back off. He gave Jack a nod and moved back. Some of the big men kept an eye on them while others moved away to help check all the bodies as they went about clearing the room. Angus was a big man himself, standing 6'6". He weighed at least 250 and very little of it was muscle. His tailored suit did a fair job of disguising his prominent pear shape. He had several fat chins, but a nice head of brownish blonde hair combed straight back. Surprisingly, it wasn't going gray. Angus gave others gray hair.
My God, Jack. I can hardly believe your call.
I'm glad you made it here before we were handcuffed, hog-tied, and carted off.
Me too,
the big man said as he took in Angela.
Angus, I'd like you to meet Angela Constantine. Angela, this is Angus, the man who got you released before from those overly enthusiastic intel agents.
Angela reached out and shook the man's hand. Thank you for helping me, sir. Jack almost did a double take at how polite she was. He realized then that she was doing her part to help him with a tense situation. He knew that what she really wanted to do was give him an earful about the injustice of those men taking her prisoner when she had been the one who had discovered the bomb for them, done their job for them. Jack silently let out a sigh of relief that she didn't. The sight of this woman in cut-off shorts, boots, platinum blonde hair tipped in red, piercings down her ears, a big dark angel tattoo across her throat, there in the room with Angus and all his men in tactical black, was quite the contrast. Angus quickly returned to business.
I can't believe this place is only minutes from my office.
He looked a little sick as he gazed at the bomb.
I simply can't believe it. Had that thing gone off,
you would have been vaporized, along with most of the government and a large part of D.C., Jack said.
Angus nodded, still looking queasy as he stared at the bomb.
I still can't catch my breath over how close this was to being a catastrophe for our country.
Is the Nest team on its way? Jack asked. That bomb is still live.
Yes,
Angus said, returning his attention to Jack.
They should be here any minute. The sooner that thing is made safe, the sooner I'll be able to breathe.
He looked at Angela again, then back to Jack as he cleared his throat.
What's she doing here? Was it really necessary to bring her along?
I didn't bring her, Jack said. She brought me.
Angus frowned.
What are you talking about?
You owe her for stopping that other nuke from going to New York City.
Angus smiled politely.
Yes, we do. That's why we released her after things were cleared up. And we gave her that special weapons permit as a token of our deep appreciation.
You should be thanking your lucky stars that you did.
Angus clasped his hands behind his back.
Why is that?
Because after you had her released, she found out about this second bomb.
Jack pointed a thumb back at the device.
Had you not released her, had those rogue agents had their way with her, Washington would be under a mushroom cloud at 4 p.m. today.
Well, I don't know that I can entirely believe.
Angus, you need to listen carefully to me so that you can comprehend the seriousness of this situation. None of your people knew there was a second bomb, did they? Any evidence about the second bomb was destroyed in the explosion when you went in after the first one. Even if they would have gotten any intel, you would still never have found this one, but even if you had, it would have been disastrous.
Why do you say that?
Jack gestured off behind the electrical equipment to the dead man in the chair, his legs straight out in front of him, his arms hanging, his face a bloody mess.
That guy there is sitting on a dead man's switch. If, by some miracle, you would have found out about this bomb in time, your men would have blown him off that chair and that would have detonated the device.
Angus wiped his forehead. He was looking a little green.
God damn, Jack. You're scaring the crap out of me.
Angela found out about this device, not unlike she found the other one. She was able to track it to this place. Angela, no one else, was able to find it in time and deal with it without letting that guy on the dead man's switch move a muscle.
Angus looked at the man in the chair, then around at all the bodies.
So then you shot all of them when you got here?
No, she did. I was just her backup. The men in the tactical gear, their eyes the only thing visible in their black masks, exchanged looks. They were probably all just as good shots, but they found it hard to believe. Angus frowned.
Are you serious?
I am, Jack said. She's a better shot with that 22 than anyone I've ever seen. No shots to center mass, every one a headshot. Every bullet she fired today killed a terrorist. One bullet? One man.
Well, it took two for that guy down on the second floor stairs, Angela corrected. I screwed up and waited a fraction of a second too long, so it took two bullets.
Yeah, Jack argued to her in defense. But you put that second round through his ear, from across the room, after you put the first one through his throat so he couldn't call out an alarm.
The men in black exchanged looks again. They had probably found the guy below with the bullet hole in through his ear. Angus gaped at her a moment, and then shook his head.
Hundreds of billions of dollars worth of national security, and stopping this threat came down to you two. Down to her, with a 22.
He turned back to Jack.
We're going to need to debrief her about all of this, of course.
I'm afraid I can't allow you to do that. Angus, Angela is my asset, not yours.
He looked shocked.
But this concerns national security.
That's not my job, and it's not hers.
Angus's eyes narrowed.
Is this about the program that was canceled?
My contract that was canceled, yes. I'm happy that we were able to stop these two bombs from destroying New York City and Washington, D.C., but I don't work for you anymore. I don't provide intel for you any longer. By your choice.
Well, I'm sorry about the way all of that went down, Jack, but the political people in charge don't approve of profiling.
I understand, Jack said. I'm not complaining. I was able to find work.
With the Mossad.
Jack knew it was an educated guess. He simply shrugged.
The Israelis aren't perfect either, Angus said.
No, they aren't. But they don't put political correctness ahead of stopping terrorists. They can't afford to. So, since I don't have a contract with you any longer, I'm afraid that the assets I've developed are my assets alone. I need them in my work for those who employ me. Since your agency isn't interested in the work I do or employing me, I'm afraid that Angela can't discuss anything about what she was able to do in stopping this terrorist event.
Angus chewed his lower lip for a moment.
Jack, it's critical that we find out what went wrong, that allowed it to get this close to disaster.
As a professional courtesy, Jack said. After I get Angela safely home, I'll fill you in on what I found out. I won't discuss what Angela was able to do, but I will let you know what we learned, so that you can understand how everything went so wrong.
Well,
Angus said with a sigh,
that would be helpful.
Angela pointed at the two prisoners. Medics were tending to Raphael. We saved you two prisoners. I didn't shoot them so that you can interrogate them all you want. Jack's idea.
What happened to that one?
Angus asked. He asked me to shoot him, Angela said. So I did, just not where he wanted me to shoot him. His name is Raphael. He is the leader of this entire mission. The other one is Lobo. He's a coward. I expect he will talk. Jack smiled. Angus stared at her in astonishment for a moment.
Anyway, Jack said, Raphael there brought the material for the two bombs in through the Oeste Mesa border crossing during the big attack. All the rest of it, all the other attacks, all of it, was merely meant to obscure the fact that the border crossing was the one that mattered. That's how they got the critical bomb material in.
Angus could only stare in disbelief.
Like I say, if you want to continue to enjoy my cooperation as your unpaid personal advisor, she is to be left out of it. If you should get any unpleasant ideas, please keep in mind my previous warning about the consequences of what I know getting out.
Angus cast a suspicious look at Jack, then at Angela.
And what does she want out of this?
Nothing, Jack said. She doesn't want recognition or any reward. She did this to save innocent lives. She just wants to be left alone to live her life. I think you owe her that much. But a great many people owe her a great deal. They owe her their lives, even if they don't know it, and never will. This government owes it to her to let her live hers. Angus lifted an eyebrow, then stuck a finger in his thick hair and scratched his scalp as he thought it over for a moment. Finally, he looked Angela in the eye.
In light of the fact that you saved untold lives today, young lady, to say nothing of the damage it would have done to the government, the infrastructure, the electromagnetic pulse that would have taken out a large part of the East Coast, and the possibility this could have cascaded into global nuclear war, I want you to know that you have your government's deepest gratitude, even if that gratitude can't be expressed publicly, for obvious reasons. I'm afraid that in the national interest, this entire matter must be kept several levels above even top secret. Top secret things are routinely leaked. This must never be. Ever.
I understand, sir. And I'll keep it that way, Angela said. You have my word. Angus nodded his relief. He even added a grateful smile. Jack doubted that Angus could ever comprehend her reasons for doing what she had done. It was not for recognition. It was because she was a stone-cold killer of killers. The United States had just been saved by a serial killer. Angus smiled with an idea.
Well, there is one thing I'm able to do for you. You have that weapons permit we gave you?
Angela nodded. Yes, sir. Thank you. Angus's smile widened.
I'll tell you what. We're going to upgrade it for you.
Angela frowned. How can you upgrade it? I was told it already allows me to carry whatever I want, wherever I want.
Yes, that's true enough. But now, it's going to give you access to our special armory and gunsmiths. Anything you want will be yours.
You mean you have a catalog of guns for spies? Angus laughed.
Not quite, but almost. You'll have a personal contact who will be able to advise you and make suggestions. I realize that you know what you're doing, but these people know a great deal about weapons. They will see to it that you get whatever you want, things you likely don't even know exist. The best of the best.
Angela gestured around at all the dead. Do you think I'm lacking? I think my .22 worked just fine.
Yes, it did.
Angus arched an eyebrow.
But I think our armory can get you a 22, or anything you might want, that you will find special, and just for you. It's a small token of appreciation from a grateful government, a government with a lot of good people, despite the fools you encountered before. Really, Angela, considering what you went on to do here today for everyone, despite how you were treated before, that shows what a special person you really are. We have hundreds of billions of dollars invested in making sure this never happens. Yet, it almost did. Only your initiative stopped it. You deserve a small token of our appreciation. I hope you will accept it.
Angela bowed her head. Thank you, sir. I would be glad to.
Now, Angus said, our nest team is right behind me. They need to get in here and dismantle this thing and make sure the plutonium is safe.
69. Angela was glad that she had stopped to see Barry. He'd already had one operation on his face, and he would need several more, but he was in good spirits to have survived. He was glad that those four men hadn't managed to find Angela and harm her. He felt tremendously ashamed for telling them where she lived. Angela convinced Barry that it was all right, that no one could have stood up to what they were doing to him without talking. She told him that she was far more worried about him, and wished that he had told them what they wanted to know before it had gone as far as it did. He asked what had happened to the men. She told him that they'd gotten into a fight with someone, and they had been shot and killed. He was surprised to hear it. She smiled and told Barry that Karma was a bitch. He laughed a little, and said not to make him laugh because it hurt. He knew about Angela and the rest of the girls keeping the bar open for him. They had all been visiting him. He thanked her over and over for that. She told him that she only did it because she needed the money, not because she was keeping it open for him. He laughed again, and winced in pain again. He hadn't been too keen on the ladies' night thing, but after Tiffany had let him know how much money it had brought in for the bar, he was warming up to the idea, especially since Nate was there to keep things under control. Angela turned into the trailer park just before the Milford Falls Cozy Court sign. The road in had once been blacktop, but very little of that paving still showed through the dirt and gravel. A man named Al, in a dirty white t-shirt, sitting in a rusty blue metal chair in front of his trailer, watched her drive by. Angela remembered Al sitting in that chair watching the world go by back when she had lived with her mother. She'd heard that he was on disability of some sort. He had seemed harmless enough, but never spoke to her as she had walked past him on her way home from school. Nearby, a heavy-set woman in a flowered dress stretched up to hang laundry on a line. At another trailer, an old couple sat together on their small porch. Angela drove past a man in shorts and flip-flops, leaning in under the hood of a beat-up car. Behind a group of mobile homes, she saw thick brush where she used to hide at night rather than go home. At least until Bosca had put an end to that. Seeing the all-too-familiar place where she had grown up gave Angela a sick feeling in the pit of her stomach. A lot of bad things in her life had happened in this place. Ages ago, in the beginning, it had probably been a nice place to live. But in Angela's lifetime, it had always been an overgrown, run-down, squalid area on the wrong side of the tracks, infested with meth and all the criminal activity that went with it. A lot of people who lived here were nice enough, but they had nowhere else to go, so they had no choice but to put up with all the trouble. Angela had been one of those who'd had nowhere to go, and who had to put up with a lot of bad things. She drove past mobile homes all parked at the same angle to an ancient master plan. Some had no skirting, so the wheels were exposed. All of them were up on blocks of some sort to make them level. Most had broken lattice panels covering the space under them. Others had corrugated metal skirting. A lot of places had dogs on chains. The dogs tended to live in the dirt under the mobile homes to stay out of the sun or the rain or the snow. Cats roamed freely. When she'd been little, Angela used to feed scraps of food to some of the cats to get the opportunity to pet them. Because most of the mobile homes were up off the ground on blocks, they all had elevated porches with steps up to them. Some of those steps were wooden with rickety railings, while others were made of concrete blocks. Most of the elevated porches had corrugated metal awnings overhead, some held aloft with wrought iron, some with a couple of 2x4s. Most of the mobile homes were a rust-stained off-white, but there were some that were weather-worn turquoise, mint green, and sky blue. Those with color also had areas of white for contrast. Mature trees stood among the homes, providing shade. Uncut, dusty weeds grew everywhere. Derelict vehicles sat up on blocks as they were slowly cannibalized or used for junk storage. Old barbecues and lawn chairs sat around outside many of the homes. Angela turned down a street with water-filled potholes that looked like bomb craters. Her truck bounced through the unavoidable potholes until she reached her mother's faded pink-and-white trailer. The white door and trim were streaked with decades of water and rust stains. A corroded brown air conditioner jutting out a front window was propped up with a scavenged board. Sally's faded maroon Pontiac GTO sat at a crooked angle beside the trailer, one of its back tires long flat. A newer economy car was parked there, too. After parking, Angela sat for a long moment before she tapped her horn. Her stomach roiled as she climbed the sagging gray wooden steps to the porch. A pair of little dirty white dogs next door yapped at her. She knocked on the bent aluminum screen door and stood to the side, waiting. When the door opened, an older, short, round woman peered out. She had on a clean, neat, pale blue dress. "Hi, I'm Angela." The woman immediately broke into a warm smile as she held the door open with one arm and motioned Angela in with her other, as if they were old friends.
"Angela! I'm so happy to meet you at last. I'm Betty. We spoke on the phone. My, but aren't you a pretty thing, and so tall?"
Her face suddenly creased with concern.
"How are you, dear? Are you okay?"
This was a woman who was sincerely concerned for the well-being of others. She had a warm heart. Angela found it refreshing, but also troubling. She was the kind of person who often ended up, because of their kind nature, being victimized by evil people. "I'm feeling a lot better," Angela said as she stepped through the doorway. She had used the excuse of her hospital stay as the reason for not being able to come by sooner. It was more believable than saying she had been away gunning down terrorists. Seeing the inside of the trailer made her insides feel like they were twisting into a knot. The far wall still had the same wrinkled wallpaper with pink flowers lifting at the seams. It was coming up in more places now. In one corner, a triangle of wallpaper hung down. The wall to the left still had the multi-layered brown stain down the middle from years of a leaky roof. The beige linoleum flooring had a missing section in the kitchen corner, leaving the subfloor exposed, the same as when Angela had lived there. She had forgotten about the off-putting smell of mold. It made her want to hold her breath, or at least cover her mouth. The kitchen table with the tubular chrome legs was still there, but the sagging blue velour couch was gone, as was the brown vinyl and plaid cloth reclining chair, its bursting seams held together with duct tape. There had always been baskets of dirty clothes lying around, and a lot of clothes that had missed the baskets. Those were all gone now. The place seemed so much smaller, so much less threatening than Angela remembered. The room had obviously been cleared out to make space for the hospital bed provided by hospice. There was a heart monitor over the bed as well as a stand with an IV drip. Hospice provided all the pain medication Sally needed or wanted on the condition that if her heart stopped, there would be no resuscitation. With cancer that had spread through her internal organs, there was nothing that could be done for her, and resuscitation would be a pointless exercise of merely gaining a few more pain-filled, delirious, semi-conscious hours of life. Hospice meant to make the end of life as dignified and pain-free as possible in the comfort of home. In return, the family had to accept it when the patient's time had come. Betty hurried over to the bed.
Sally!
She shook the skeleton's arm.
Sally, your daughter is here. Angela came to see you.
Angela's mother rolled her head from side to side, mumbling something as she worked at opening her eyes.
That's right. Your daughter Angela is here.
The girl in the moon,
her mother said in a thin, moaning voice.
Is it really the girl in the moon?
Betty beamed a smile back over her shoulder at Angela as she motioned for her to come stand next to her mother. Angela did as instructed. Betty put a comforting hand on Angela's back, urging her a little closer. Hi, Ma. Her mother was so thin, Angela could make out all the bones in her hands and arms. A nightdress, one of her mother's favorites, the one with the leopard print, covered her sunken chest. Her face was hardly more than a skull covered with waxy, blotchy skin. Her eyes were set deep into their nearly hollow sockets. She had only a few white wisps of hair over a scalp covered with irregular dark spots. She had lost a few of her remaining teeth since Angela had seen her last. Now there was only one yellow, rotted tooth on the top and three on the bottom. She had the smell of death about her. When Sally held her arm out a little, opening and closing her fingers, Betty knew what she wanted. She put a plastic glass of water in Sally's hand, helped guide it closer, and put the straw between Sally's cracked lips so she could take a sip. A towel lay beside her shoulder. It was obvious that she used the towel to spit up blood. Betty snatched it away and replaced it with a clean one.
It's time for her pain medication, Betty said in a low voice.
No,
Sally said, her eyes opening, suddenly more alert.
Not yet.
She reached out for Angela's hand. When Angela offered it, she grasped it in frail, cold fingers, wrinkled, paper-like flesh clung to bone. Betty leaned to the side so she could speak to Angela confidentially.
She's a little more lucid when it's time for her pain medication, which is good, but it also means she's starting to have a lot of pain. Even on the medication, she's still in pain, but for the most part, she's not conscious enough to feel it. We give her the medication every 4 hours, but if she is feeling pain, she can have more as often as she wants.
That's good, Angela whispered back.
It's powerful narcotics. Very addicting,
Betty confided. She cast a sidelong glance at Sally.
But that's not something to worry about at this point. I thought you should know.
Sure. Thanks. Angela didn't think there was any point in saying anything about addictive drugs and her mother. Angela thought it was ironic that Sally would die as she had lived, doped up and stoned out of her mind.
I'm going to go in the kitchen and get your next round of pain medication ready,
Betty told Sally in a rather loud voice as she patted her frail arm.
You have a nice visit with your daughter.
Angela's mother nodded. 70. Watching the ever-cheerful Betty shuffle toward the kitchen, Angela thought the woman seemed downright out of place in the dreary trailer. She was a lone streetlight, happily illuminating the gloom in a storm. The world needed more people like Betty, instead of people like Raphael. Or Cassiel. The thought of Cassiel lusting to kill people like the innocent, ever-agreeable Betty made Angela's anger boil up. She reminded herself that she had stopped those men from harming innocent people, and Cassiel was no more. Angela finally looked up at the hallway leading to her old bedroom. The dirty, beige shag carpeting had been worn through to the jute backing in places. The hallway looked narrower than she remembered. She had told herself that she would visit her mother, but she was not going to go back to look at her old room. "Betty is going to get your pain medication, Ma," Angela said, turning her attention back to her mother.
"I don't want it yet,"
her mother said, her head rolling from side to side to emphasize the point.
"I want to be awake to see you first."
Angela had never known her mother to turn down narcotics in favor of remaining aware of anyone. Sally grasped Angela's hand in both of hers.
"Do you think God will take me in when I come to call on him?"
"If anyone could use his compassion, it would be you, Ma." Her mother smiled. The smile twisted as the pain started to bear down. She grabbed the towel by her shoulder to cough into it for a moment. "I'm sorry it hurts, Ma," Angela said, feeling a pang for her mother. "I wish I could make the pain go away." Her mother put the towel down as she gasped to catch her breath. She lifted a hand partway, both in frustration and to dismiss the concern.
"The pain will end soon enough."
She finally looked up at Angela as tears welled up in her eyes.
"All the pain will end soon enough."
Angela didn't know if her mother meant the pain would end when Betty brought another dose of drugs, or if she meant when she died. Either way, Angela didn't ask. "Can you tell me something, Ma?" Her mother's brow drew down as she focused on Angela's face.
"What?"
"Why have you always called me the girl in the moon?"
"Ah,"
her mother said with a nod as she sank back a little. "Why have you always called me that?"
"Because that's who you are,"
her mother said. "I don't understand."
"That's who you are. You're the girl in the moon. Cold, distant, hauntingly beautiful, untouchable. That's you, the girl in the moon. That's who you are. You rise above us all. Silently looking down on us, watching us, seeing what we can't see. You're not like any of us. We're all lost souls. You watch over us all. That's what you do. You are our light in the darkness, our guardian angel. My little angel. You are apart, up there, all alone."
Her mother shook her head.
"None of us are worthy of loving you. We are all lost souls, that's what we are. Lost souls who have lost our way. We can only look up to you, up there in the sky, so very far away."
Angela swallowed back a lump in her throat. She felt a tear run down her cheek. She had never thought of it that way, but her mother was right. That was exactly what she was. She was the girl in the moon. Her mother was right, too, in that Angela felt no normal human connections. She felt no emotion at all most of the time. The only time she felt a rush of emotion was when she came down to Earth to kill men who needed killing. She had been born broken because of all the drugs her mother took. Her mother's habit left Angela something less than normal. And something more. Angela had always wanted to confront her mother about all the things that she had done and not done. But she realized now it would be pointless. What was the use of confronting a hollow shell of a woman lying there at the end of her life? A life wasted, a life she herself never valued.
I've got your pain medication, Betty said as she returned and saw Sally grimace and roll her head. Sally nodded.
Yes, please. God, yes, give me that hit.
Betty stuck the needle into the IV port.